from the number one sports site in the world. Yahoo! This is Yahoo Sports Radio. YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Yelovich is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Mocco. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's Friday! It's a landslide!
Joe Mocco and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's going in!
Right now.
Incredibly, within seconds.
From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Mocco.
Hello, soccer fans. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, now available on iTunes. I'm Joe Mocco, editor of the FC Yahoo blog. Joining me in the Playa Vista podcasting room here in LA is Joey Galino, who did a great job hosting last week.
Thank you. I tried my best. I'm not as good as you, but hopefully with time, you know, it'll improve.
I felt like listening to the podcast, I was Wayne Rooney, the balding, aging guy, watching Marcus Rashford take my job away.
I don't know if I'm that good.
And on Skype, we have fellow Los Angelino Alex Baker.
Coming at you from downtown LA, Joe. How's it going?
Good. And as always, in New York, the one and only Leander Charlakens.
You know, Joey wasn't saying the same sort of things when you were in the room.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, Rashford's talking trash about Rooney in the back room. So,
yes.
Guys, we're down to the final four in the Champions League. But before we review the quarterfinal second legs and Barcelona's surprising exit, we've got to talk about this Europa League quarterfinal second leg that just happened an hour ago. I think one that will be forever remembered by Liverpool supporters. If you didn't see it, in one of the more unlikely comebacks in recent memory, Liverpool was down 3-1 to Borussia Dortmund in their Europa League quarterfinal second leg, and then scored three times in really the final half hour to win 4-3, 5-4 on aggregate to advance to the Europa League semifinals. It was shades of the miracle of Istanbul in the 2005 Champions League final. Yeah, I'm just going to ask one question. How the heck did this happen?
That's a really good question, and I'm not entirely sure that any of us has an answer. So we'll try to formulate something coherent anyway. You know, it wasn't just 3-1, but it was 3-1 away for Borussia Dortmund. So Liverpool needed all three of those goals that it wound up getting, and they just chipped away at them, and they just got their goals from such unlikely places, really, because, you know, Philippe Coutinho is liable to score a nice goal every now and again, but he's mercurial, and you'd never really know what you're going to get, especially kind of later on in games. And then Mamadou Sakho and Dejan Lovren score, of all people, you know, these guys that have been getting so much criticism, not just this season, but last year as well. And they get these little headers where all of a sudden Borussia Dortmund, which is one of the best teams in the world, they just forget how to defend. And I don't recall ever seeing a German team collapse like that. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't. It was a little surprising. Dortmund's defensive record this year, if I'm not mistaken, it's not as sterling as some of the other clubs in Europe. I think they have averaged giving up at least one goal a game. So you're not talking about like this fortress in the back, but you are talking about a team that has a lot of internationals back there, a lot of experience. So you don't really expect it to happen. Going back to the question, I actually have a theory that's kind of formulating in my head a little bit, just looking at the way that this game played out, and I'll bounce this off you guys. So when the second half starts, let's just go back to the beginning of the game, and Dortmund gets the two early goals. Then the second half starts, and Divock Origi pulls one back for Liverpool, and the fight's kind of on. And then a little bit after that, Marco Reus scores, and I think everybody, you know, us in here and around the soccer Twitterverse in the world thought that was the end right there. If you think back to another manager that Liverpool had, maybe a Brendan Rodgers or even a Kenny Dalglish, you know, maybe that moment kind of like sinks them a little bit because they look to the sideline or they think about just the attitude around the training ground and around the club at the moment, and they kind of sulk a little bit and they don't fight like they would have for someone like, say, Jurgen Klopp. Meanwhile, you've got this energetic guy, Jurgen Klopp, who, you know, when this supposed death knell, quote unquote, goal is scored, instead of sulking and slinking down and you know, kind of getting down on yourself, they reflect their manager and they're like, okay, now it's time to press even harder and even harder. And that combination of that kind of energy, and as Leander said, the goal's kind of coming from unexpected areas, you know, that's the best I can do. I mean, this is when you throw your full weight forward and try to get goals, sometimes you do get them, even against one of the best teams in the world. And I do think that this is kind of an example, a tangible example of the Jurgen Klopp effect.
Yeah, I think the one parallel when I was watching this unfold was in 2005 in Istanbul, Liverpool got its motivation from Steven Gerrard. He was the one that willed them into the 3 goals in 6 minutes.
Totally.
To overcome the 3-0 halftime deficit. I think all of, you know, Liverpool now gets its motivation not from really anyone on the field. It comes from Klopp. And maybe it's this confidence that he's been able to restore in these players who kind of floundered under Brendan Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, you know what? Even if we're down 3-1, we still, maybe there's a way somehow. And you could see the fight. I mean, they got goals from guys who have been, you know, much maligned. Like
Dejan Lovren
of all people scores the winner in injury time. And, you know, so Leander has talked about this many times in writing about Liverpool, is Jurgen Klopp is well on his way to rebuilding Liverpool. I mean, they're not anywhere near to contending for a European title, and he's going to bring in new people. But Leander, I mean, where does this place Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool a result like this in the rebuilding process?
I think it's the sort of cathartic moment that you really, really need. And I do think that to say that Klopp is a rah-rah manager and that's where it all comes from is to give him short shrift a little bit, because guys like that don't last in jobs for 7 years. True. Like he did with Dortmund and he did with Mainz, I believe. You know, there's a tactical substance there as well. But, you know, you need these moments that just kind of reinvigorate a team and that, you know, get the fan base behind you. I think that they were behind Brendan Rodgers, but when there are a few bad results and after that sort of miracle season where they almost won it, when things kind of regressed back to the mean and they came sixth, they just kind of, I think, lost their belief in him fairly quickly. And I think that having those moments, those iconic games, can do so much for a manager, and it just kind of buys him time and credit. So I think that's important. I think the other thing that he's done is he's gotten a pretty good sense, while putting the team back on the track, who in that squad is going to be useful to him going forward, because it was widely analyzed that Liverpool had such a disparate set of pieces in its team. I mean, it wasn't really a squad so much as just a random assembly of players. You know, some of them brought in by Rodgers, some of them brought in by the transfer committee, some of them brought in by his many predecessors. And I think he's gotten a pretty good picture of who's going to work within his system. And you know, this project in a lot of ways doesn't even really start for him until next year when he's had a summer to start putting things together. But a game like Thursday's, like today's, is going to help him in the long run when he has a bad day.
Yeah, you know, Dortmund, they're a much better team than Liverpool, but I think they got the third goal, and I think they switched off a little bit. I think they thought this game is won. And if I could be a little bit of a sentimentalist, I feel like maybe the 12th man had a bit to play today, because, you know, tomorrow is the anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster. There definitely was something in the air tonight. And the Liverpool players, just in the end, it sounds like a cliche, but they just wanted it. They wanted it that much more. And, I mean, you couldn't write that. It was like a movie script, the way it unfolded. But,
I think the parallel there is also apt. You know, we were kind of comparing it to the miracle in Istanbul a little bit ago. And that game, you know, Joe, you said that, that Gerrard was the source of inspiration, whereas Klopp might have been that today. Obviously, they weren't playing that game at home, but the stage in Istanbul in the Champions League final was huge. And the stage here, I do think, as Alex said, kind of came into play a little bit. You know, the Hillsborough anniversary coming up, like you mentioned, but also just the European nights at Anfield. They just, you know, there's a reason people talk about them and salivate over them. It's just such a great atmosphere. It really comes out through the television. You can tell even if you're watching what it's like. And so, you know, like every goal, every piece of nice play Liverpool had kind of seemed to build that belief. And I think there's definitely a tangible effect that the fans had.
On the flip side, this was a, I don't know how you want to characterize it, but it was a somewhat devastating defeat for Thomas Tuchel and Dortmund, who are second in the Bundesliga, but more than likely aren't going to catch Bayern Munich. What is the defeat like this of somewhat epic proportions? What does it do for a team, and how is this going to impact Borussia Dortmund?
Well, the question is for me, you know, like you said, they're so far ahead of even third place in the Bundesliga that they're going to get Champions League football next year. There's no question about that. You know, the question you always have to ask with a club like Dortmund is who might be, you know, sold over the summer, who might be coming in. You know, is it time to find that next, you know, prospect and bring them up? And maybe it's Christian Pulisic, our buddy here for the U.S. national.
That's
team.
Why they lost. Pulisic didn't come off the bench.
Should have put Pulisic.
I know.
Blew it.
It's he would have scored 6 goals clearly and put them
he was close on the weekend.
Away. But I think that, you know, what does it do to Dortmund in the short term? I don't think tangibly that much. I don't think the results are going to, like I said, they're going to make the Champions League again next year. It's just you know, what do they have left to play for now? They have the Champions League spot all wrapped up. They have I think they're in the semifinals of the DFB Pokal. So I don't know if it's as devastating to their actual season in terms of like results and things like that as it might be to kind of the psyche of the club. And they just, you know, looked across the field and saw their old manager do to them what they were doing to other teams. You know, with that kind of spirit for a number of years. So, you know, I guess at the end of the day, I'd say it's devastating in the moment, but I don't know how much it's going to change.
Maybe that's a twist of the knife that
Maybe
I was getting
Maybe a little bit
to.
Of a twist, yeah.
Well, they were clearly upset. I mean, which suggests that they wanted to win this tournament. Oh, obviously, yeah. You'd be upset giving away a league like that. But I think that losses like that are harmful not so much when they're unique, but they are when they come sort of in a little bit of a cluster. Because then before you know it, you're the team that has the reputation, even if statistics don't necessarily bear that out, that can't live up to the big moments, and the team that kind of chokes. And that is something dangerous, I think, because that sort of starts to lead its own life. Mm-hmm. And you know, before you know it, you're that team where it's a semifinal, and all the talk about your team is on how you know you'll play pretty soccer, but you don't stand a chance in the end because your team always falls short. So there's a danger in that, but taken by itself, I agree with Joey. I don't think it's going to be super harmful long term.
Yeah, I gotta agree. You know, Dortmund is a Champions League team. So let's face it, just the fact that they're in the Europa League is they're kind of slumming it to some degree. They're going to finish top four. They're going to be in the Champions League. Whereas Liverpool doesn't really have anything else. They're not going to win anything else this season. They're not going to make the top four. So I think that maybe is what gave them that extra edge. But I don't think this is – I think Dortmund will shrug this off pretty quickly, I would imagine.
So Liverpool joins Athletic Bilbao, which beat Sevilla today 2-1 to go through. The other two are Shakhtar Donetsk.
Love that name.
Which got by Sporting Braga. They won 4-0 today at home. And then the fourth team is Villarreal. They won 4-2 at Sparta Prague. So that's your Europa League Final Four. The draw will be held Friday morning, as will the draw for the Champions League. So let's move on to the Champions League. We have a Final Four of Real Madrid, which got a Cristiano Ronaldo hat trick to get by Wolfsburg. Manchester City, which ousted PSG and their deep pockets, and Bayern Munich, which had its hands full before dismissing Benfica. But the biggest story of these quarterfinal second legs was definitely Atletico Madrid, again eliminating Barcelona in the quarters for the second time in three seasons. Mm-hmm. So we had Ryan Bailey talk on FC Yahoo today about what's wrong with Barcelona. I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Really, what's wrong with Lionel Messi and Neymar?
Well, like Ryan pointed out in his video, you know, they've not really been the same since the international break, because those guys, Messi, Neymar, and Suarez, all went to South America in a pretty short turnaround and came back, and they've just kind of ghost walked a little bit. Even though Suarez did have those two goals in the first leg, he's not been as influential. Messi, I think, tried to kind of force a path through the middle of the field that's just really not there against Atletico Madrid. And he's now not scored in five games in a row, which I suppose on planet Messi constitutes something of a crisis, which is kind of hilarious in its own right. But, you know, those guys just kind of, all three of them at the same time, have gone off the boil a little bit, even again if Suarez did get those goals. And, you know, the point of having three weapons like them is that when one has an off day, the other two are still there. But when all three of them misfire at once, suddenly that Barcelona machinery grinds to a halt pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think even, you know, before the international break, there were some signs that this was coming off the rails a little bit. If you look at the game against Villarreal, where they had a 2-0 lead, Barcelona, and they let two goals slip and they wound up with a draw, could have lost the game if the ref had been a little bit less benevolent towards Javier Mascherano's late challenge. So, you know, I think they're paying the price for not having much of a rotation for these guys. They were trying to sign a striker back in the January window. You heard talks about it. They didn't do it. They've got really no one to take the place of any of the MSN. The signings they've made haven't really panned out. Vidal, Turan have been disappointing. So I just think this team is tired, you know. I think they're pretty exhausted, especially the front three.
Yeah, I think that it can almost be boiled down to a very simple but true sentence. It's really, really hard to win 39 matches in a row, or to not lose in 39 matches in a row when, like you guys said, you don't really have a rotation so much as you have a devastating attacking trio, and maybe you want to even say quadruple if you want to throw Iniesta in there. And those guys really don't get a lot of time off. And so I definitely think your guys' points are valid. I do also want to point out, though, that these things are always the perfect combination of some form of events. And if you look at the fixtures that they've had since coming back, from the international break, you know, you have El Clasico. I know it was at the Nou Camp, but it's still a huge game, full of emotion. They're coming off that South American break, the MSN trio up top where they might be tired. They lose that game. So then they have the sluggish first half against Atletico Madrid, who really was the team left in the Champions League field best positioned to beat Barcelona if anyone was going to do it. And so, you know, they Barcelona wins that first leg, but they struggle in doing so. Then they have a weekend trip to Real Sociedad. Not a huge name, but it's a team that, you know, is pretty decent in La Liga. I think they're middle of the table. They've played Barcelona before. There's no wow factor there necessarily. Barca loses that game. And then they have the fixture against Atletico Madrid a few days later that's at the Vicente Calderon. So it's not the easiest set of fixtures for Barcelona to experience with all those other factors taken into consideration. And I think that you can kind of find the seeds of, you know, how this was sown, how these losses and how this exit from the Champions League were sown in that regard.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't, you know, we definitely got to give Atletico Madrid full credit. Diego Simeone has a blueprint to beat Barcelona, obviously. You know, late in the game, Barcelona, I mean, well, throughout the second leg, Barcelona could not play their triangle 1-2s through the Atletico defense, and then they kind of resorted to lofting balls into the box, and that's how Barcelona scores goals. But let's talk about how far Atletico Madrid can take this. Is, you know, Bayern, Real Madrid, and Man City are all, you know, you can really say they all have probably better, they're better equipped to make the final. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the bookies have Atletico maybe fourth in that four. But, I mean, what is the reason for Atletico, like, make a case for them why they would make the final?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd like to ask Laurent Blanc that if Manchester City are what, party guests to the semifinals? What does that make Atletico Madrid? But my argument would be very simple, and it would be
they're the guys that are doing the valet parking.
They're the ticket takers or something like that. No, but they just beat Barcelona, and all. If you look at the other three teams and the attackers that those teams have, you know, they don't. Obviously, they're not as potent as Barcelona, but Atletico just showed you what it can do to slow down teams that have better attackers. Now, I understand that those teams are also a little bit better in the air than Barcelona might be, so maybe forcing them out wide and forcing them to play those crosses, whereas that's effective against Barcelona, may not be so much against, you know, a Cristiano Ronaldo or a Thomas Muller, Robert Lewandowski. But they can defend very well, and they can be opportunistic on the counter. And if, you know, people are already complaining out there that, you know, this is not going to be the prettiest brand of soccer going forward. It's not going to necessarily be as entertaining, and there's not going to be the kind of flair you would have if you had Barcelona in the final. But the blueprint for Atletico is basically doing what they just did. They know how to play that way. It's not how they always play, which is also an important distinction. If you watch any of the other La Liga matches, they're actually very talented. They're very good at possession and passing and, you know, like creating chances and things like that. But when they have to play like this, they can. And they might have to the rest of the way, but I think they'll surely trade that for a Champions League trophy.
I think that what Barcelona lacks a little bit, or maybe this incarnation of Barcelona that Atletico has in spades, is a little bit of cynicism and that ability to sort of understand when it's time to just kind of pack it in and absorb pressure. And Barcelona in that sense sort of seems like a slave to its own ideology, where, you know, it comes into that game with a 2-1 lead. You know, they don't, all they need is a tie or to lose by one goal. And what do? They just go forward and forward and forward. And that's what they're built to do, and I get that. And they sort of, you know, maybe with their back line, you don't want to spend too much time bailing out water in the back. But Atletico sort of understands what they are very well, but they can also adapt that. They can attack, and they can make the play to break down a team that's sort of sitting in against them. And they can also do the opposite, like they did against Barcelona part of the time, and to sort of sit in and absorb that pressure. And what they're, I think, the best at is, and that's going to come in really, really handy when they're playing teams like Bayern Munich or Real Madrid, is absorb and then break forward. And they're just so, so fast on the counter. They can get from one box to the other in two passes, you know, 5 seconds or less. They're so lethal when they do that. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a Chelsea-like run to the title. Not to diminish that there, Joe, but a team that's just kind of bunkering in.
No offense.
And you say this on the record, but I know that that's not really how you feel. A team that's just bunkering in and sort of stealing a few goals here and there. I can absolutely see Atletico go and take the title doing that.
Yeah, I'm not going to call Atletico favorites or anything, but I think we all know that the sum of Simeone's teams are greater than its parts, and they've just taken Barcelona out. We're not talking about a Man City team that's in flying form right now. Even Bayern and Real Madrid, they've not been wonderful. So I think there's no reason to think Atleti are not capable of going to the final. And if they get there, we've seen that on their day, they can pretty much beat any team in Europe. They came within 90 seconds of winning the title two seasons ago. This could be their season.
Who would you guys anoint as the favorite now? Is it Bayern or is it
I think Bayern.
Man, that's tricky though. Yeah, I think I'd have to go with Bayern, but you know, it's such an open field. I mean, I don't, you know, the Bayern's been really good in their second legs the last couple of rounds, and when that team is on, that's the definitive favorite. But the problem is it hasn't always been there. So I'd go with them, but, you know, obviously with the caveat that this is an open field.
Go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say, Bayern doesn't seem to handle that favorite status all that well in recent seasons. They've been the favorite at the beginning of the Champions League ever since Guardiola took over, and it doesn't really serve them. So I don't know.
I think the only thing we can say conclusively, really, is that Manchester City is the least favorite of the bunch. I think that's the team that's least equipped to... you guys are chuckling, but I think it's true. That's the team that's probably the least equipped. I mean, they're by far on the furthest run that club has ever been on. They've never made it to the quarterfinals before. This is only, if I'm not mistaken, Manchester City's fifth time in the Champions League. You know, and they're... I don't know that the depth is there necessarily. I don't think the experience is there because a lot of players on that team have never been that far into this tournament.
Yeah.
So I think that whoever draws City in the semifinals will be the happiest team.
Yeah, and I, just to build off that point real quick with City, they've played very well to get to this point, and you know we're not going to deny them that. But if you look at the situation that they're in, it's kind of tense because obviously Guardiola is coming to the club in the summer. Pellegrini is on his way out. No matter what he does, even if he wins the Champions League, and wouldn't that be funny if Guardiola walked into a defending Champions League you know trophy holder, two straight jobs.
But he's done it before.
Yeah.
It would be funny.
But you know, also City in the league they're in fourth place right now, and I do believe they're 3 or 4 points up on Manchester United. So they do have, you know, assuming Liverpool doesn't win the Europa League and all those tiebreakers and things like that, and assigned slots come into effect. But, you know, West Ham and Manchester United are going to continue that push for the fourth place spot and for, you know, one of those Champions League spots. So City has to wonder, you know, how do we manage all this? Pellegrini's never had to manage this kind of situation, and neither have those players really. And it all depends on if they manage it well enough, because they've got a lot of balls to juggle, so to speak, at this point in time. And we're not sure if they can actually do that.
Well, Pellegrini's been to the semifinals before. I believe he went twice with... I think it was with Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
So he has the experience, I think, of juggling that with the league season, but he doesn't have it with these players. Right. And I think you're right. I think that's the key.
Do you guys think assess Real Madrid's chances of going to a final and winning its 11th European title?
Oh.
Is it, you know, it maybe had one of the more arguably the most least impressive quarterfinal result in getting by Wolfsburg, which is eighth in the Bundesliga and a million miles behind Bayern Munich.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed Ronaldo to be Ronaldo at home to go through. But, you know, they do have the talent. Karim Benzema will have a point to prove now that he's not going to go to the Euros for France. I know guys that, how far do you think Real Madrid can go now?
Oh, I think they can win it all for sure. If they were more consistent in their form this year, I think that they would be the favorites, you could argue, over Bayern Munich. And every time I tweeted this the other day when I was watching the games, every time I tell myself that Real Madrid cannot win this Champions League or they're you know they don't have a good shot or anything like that, I should just punch myself in the face and say Ronaldo, 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 because the guy is amazing. I know he wasn't. I think he did have a goal in that Champions League final, the fourth one a couple years ago. So he wasn't necessarily the big player in that, but, you know, he's the guy that put away Roma. He's the guy that put away Wolfsburg 2 days ago or yesterday, whichever day it was. And when he's on form, he's very tough to stop. And then there's the other thing where, you know, we say that Real Madrid hasn't really played that well the last couple rounds. And while that's true, sometimes that can mean they're due for a really good performance. So even if they draw Bayern Munich, maybe they have the firepower to get the job done.
Look, anytime you have Sergio Ramos and Pepe on the field, there's always a chance you're going to be playing not just a man down, maybe even
maybe
two. So, guys, let's take a timeout. After the break, we'll get some Premier League, namely the title race and what looks to be the impending coronation of Leicester City. And can Tottenham really catch the Foxes? I don't know. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
Indianapolis, Indiana. I missed the first 20 minutes. Did Zabe have a Diet Coke this morning? Answer, no.
What are you drinking?
I am one down, 110 days to go on my Josh Gordon challenge.
I'll keep a chart here. And on a prison wall, every fifth day, I'll do the dash line through the four.
Okay. Buying the website now.
Did you shave this morning?
Drink a Diet Coke.
Yeah, the shaving is happening. I've decided good. I'm not doing the playoff.
Thank God.
All right, good. I'm off the hook.
I've got my Zevia zero calorie fake soda. Cream soda, no sugar, no caffeine, no artificial sweeteners.
No taste.
It's cold, it's fizzy, and simulates a Diet Coke.
can't wait for TMZ to catch you in a Diet Coke.
get out of here!
Get out of here!
The Jordan Spieth. Not in the face!
In the face!
Steve Zabin. Mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show. YahooSportsRadio.com.
It's time to get back to everything. Football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast from Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Lago.
Welcome back to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, now available on iTunes. I'm Joe Lago, editor of the FC Yahoo Soccer blog. I'm here with my friends, Joey Galino, Alex Baker, Leander Charlakins.
I can call
you guys friends, can I? Fellow bloggers.
That wasn't in our podcast contract, but you know what? I do consider you a friend, all of you.
All right. Well, before we get to the Premier League title race, we must discuss a rumor involving a Premier League team and a certain men's national team coach close to home. Ian Dark tweeted on Wednesday that Everton is considering Jurgen Klinsmann to take over as its manager, thereby unseating Roberto Martinez. But Ian Dark has since tweeted that Klinsmann denies any link to Everton, but that's not going to stop us from talking about Klinsmann and other jobs. So, guys, this link wasn't that serious, but Leander, you gave four reasons why it made sense for Klinsmann to leave and not to leave. I think I have, if I'm characterizing that correctly. Since this link to Everton has been poo-pooed, been refuted, let's go over some of those reasons why it did make sense, why Klinsmann would leave the USMNT for a club job.
Well, I thought, first of all, even though all of us in sort of the American soccer community, you know, all capitals, knew that this was probably a pretty soft rumor and that it was unlikely there was much truth to it, there was a general vibe of, oh, please let this be true. And I don't think it was even necessarily coming from the reporters so much as the fan base itself, which I think is really very telling about the Klinsmann fatigue that we're living through right now. But, you know, there were a few different reasons. I thought that it deserved at least a little bit of credibility in the sense that, for one, I think Klinsmann must understand that, you know, the job is not going well with the U.S. I mean, even he and the eternal sunshine on his mind must sort of get that, you know, he's kind of losing the confidence of, if he hasn't lost it already, of almost all the fan base. And then secondly, it would have been a really convenient way to save face for everybody, even though U.S. soccer has said there's no truth to it and he has said there's no truth to it. If it were true, it would be an easy way for them to sort of untangle themselves from each other without having to necessarily admit that this was all a terrible mistake, which it probably was. And then I think Everton as a team might be a good fit because it's sort of a forward-thinking club and his zeal for innovation might actually land a little bit better there. And finally, I think what he's run into with the U.S., and I think in fairness we have to concede that, is that there's only so much talent within the pool. And when you're with a club, and especially a Premier League club, if there isn't enough talent out there, if the players aren't right for you, you can just buy more. And when you're Everton, you can buy pretty much anyone that isn't going to be purchased by the slightly bigger clubs in England, but you know, you still have more purchasing power than most clubs in the world. So in that regard, you know, it wasn't entirely unthinkable.
Regardless of the veracity of this link, is it surprising to you guys that Klinsmann would have it definitely that still has a rep in Europe that would attract a club? You know, Everton's not the biggest club in England, but it's still, it's better than a mid-table club, a club that should be, you know, competing at least for Europa League football. The only reason I bring this up because, you know, our guys at our Yahoo UK office, you know, every time we you know, complain about Klinsmann, I get they're basically telling me, oh, you guys don't know how good he is. Like, you guys don't understand. And I'm looking at them, you know, kind of sideways, like, what are you guys talking about? I mean, just look, you know, are they getting enamored with the friendly wins? But
Klinsmann has a pedigree. He has a pedigree as a player in the Premier League. I think he played some of his best years at Tottenham. Everton's the club. It's got some new money. Obviously, it's not working out as well as it could under Martinez. He's definitely a big name. He's the kind of guy you could bring him in, and there would be the sense of something happening. They want to spend some money. They want to get in some new players. He's a project manager at this point, Klinsmann. I think if Everton wants to have that sort of perception of it's a new project, I could see why he would be an attractive guy to head that up.
I think there's two factors at play there with the perception issue, and one of them is that the English, I think even more than in any other country, still make the assumption that a great player will make a great manager, even though that's something that's been so thoroughly debunked by you know, you can point to just about anybody except Johan Cruyff where that wasn't true. And I think the other part of it is that there's sort of an insularity there, which is something that Bob Bradley has complained about at length, who's done a terrific job in various unglamorous positions, but has never really gotten a shot there. Where, you know, the for some reason, Premier League teams, when they go looking for a manager, they fish from a pool that consists of famous former players and people who have already been Premier League managers. So I think that within that tiny little bubble, someone like Jurgen Klinsmann might look like some kind of innovative and inspired managerial appointment by a team that does things differently, even though we, of course, know better.
Yeah, that's where this whole situation, regardless of how much smoke there or how much fire there was to this smoke to me, just kind of, it says the most about the state of the two sides that the rumors being floated in terms of Everton and the U.S. national team. There definitely seems to be a lot of people, like Leander hinted at, that, you know, as soon as this rumor came out, a lot of U.S. soccer fans might have been like, oh, really? Is he, you know, yeah, go, you know, let's move on from this era. And meanwhile, with Everton, you're kind of like, okay, you know, you did make good points about how they're kind of in the blog post that you wrote, Leander, about how Everton's forward thinking, they theoretically do possess kind of the attacking talents that could realize what Jurgen Klinsmann wants to try to do. But the thing about Klinsmann is he's been saying a lot of different things and promising a lot of different things in terms of his tactics and his strategy and just building the program, and it hasn't really shown up on the field. So if you're Everton, you're kind of thinking, if I'm Everton, I don't really know why I want Jurgen Klinsmann as opposed to maybe some of the other people that I could get. And if I'm the U.S. national team, I'm looking at this from the standpoint, is this really where we're at, that a rumor like this, that he could be going to a kind of a, you know, upper middle tier club in England, is something that people would actually want? So, you know, I, like you said, Joe, at the top, this is, it's kind of a ridiculous subject because there might not have been a lot up to it, but the fact that we're able to get this kind of legwork out of it and get these kind of discussions out of it says a lot about both Everton and the U.S. national team at this time.
Let's transition to the European leagues and another big weekend, especially in England, where Leicester City continues to grind out results and victories to maintain its 7-point lead over Tottenham. Leicester will be at home to West Ham on Sunday, and on Monday, Tottenham will be going to Stoke City and take on the Potters and Jeff Cameron, most likely. Leicester has a 7-point lead over Spurs. You know, the Leicester fans 2 weekends ago were chanting, we're going to win the league, and I think that still holds true after this past weekend. Guys, do you think this race is already done and dusted? And then he starts talking.
Really, the amazing thing to me about the Leicester City title challenge is that we're still questioning whether it's legitimate. I mean, they've got a 7-point lead now, and if you compare that to the other major leagues in Europe, that's as big as Bayern's lead is over Borussia Dortmund's. It's bigger than Juventus's lead is over Napoli's, which is 6 points, and it's more than twice as big as Barcelona's is over Atletico Madrid, which after two losses and a draw in their most recent games has dwindled to 3 points. If this were any other team, guys, I don't think we'd be questioning whether Leicester is for real and whether this title race isn't already done and dusted.
Yeah, I think that's the fact that it's Leicester, I think, definitely plays heavily into this. And what I keep coming back to with in terms of looking ahead, Leicester's run-in at the end of the season is actually kind of tricky. They've got West Ham visiting this weekend, which is a tricky fixture. Their last three fixtures are at Man United, home to Everton, and then at Chelsea. Now, clearly, they can win all of those. They've shown us this year that they're not afraid of anybody. They're not going to back down from anybody. And every time we expect them to trip up, you know, they rise to the occasion. So I'm not saying that this, you know, I'm not picking against them by any stretch of the imagination. But I am saying that it is a little bit interesting because if Tottenham really is in the form of it that it is, that would be evidenced by the 3-0 shellacking of Manchester United over the weekend, then it might not be over this race, and it might not necessarily be because Leicester City is not a big name, but because you just see still enough of a door open, so to speak, that maybe Tottenham, with the firepower that they have, can it might be a matter of Leicester not even playing that poorly down the stretch. They just have tough fixtures, and they don't get the requisite amount of points, and maybe Tottenham catches fire and wins the rest of their games. What do they have, like 5 or 6 left or something like that?
They have 5.
Yeah, so it's not inconceivable, but I, you know, definitely, so it's not done and dusted, but it definitely seems like Leicester has got this pretty well wrapped up.
Go ahead, Alex.
Well, let's face it, a 3-0 shellacking of Manchester United is not what it used to be.
True.
You know, it's not a but
very true.
There could be another twist or turn in this. You know, maybe it'll come down to the wire. Maybe it won't be that easy, but I just don't see Leicester surrendering at this point. They have a 7-point lead. You know, they're not going to lose.
Yeah,
it's three games.
It's hard for me to see a team like Leicester that is so committed for one another and plays so hard every week, not doing it at the most important and opportune time of the season. It just it doesn't make much sense in your head. And I know the sport doesn't make much sense at times, so that's why I'm saying maybe there is a chance that the title race is not over. But you definitely gotta tip Leicester for doing the unthinkable here.
Well, if Leicester is going to slip up, and they only need to win 3 of their last 5, even if Tottenham runs the table,
right,
9 points is going to do it. You know, if the stumble is going to begin, it's going to be this Sunday against West Ham, which with Dimitri Payet is definitely capable of going to Leicester and winning. But, you know, Leicester is getting the results. They're getting, you know, Wes Morgan scoring his first goal this season to pull out, you know, a 1-0 wins. I mean, it seems like, you know, I hate to, you know, chalk it up to destiny, but there is some, you know, element of that now. You know, Jamie Vardy finally broke his scoring drought in you know, fine fashion. So it's they have, after West Ham, they're at home to Swansea, and then they've got United, and then yeah, I don't know, I don't see where the other places were in their run-in where they're going to slip up. I mean, maybe Chelsea toward the end if it gets down to that, but. You know, also, it's not convincing that Tottenham is going to run the table.
Yeah, they've been a little they've been somewhat hot and cold at times this year. And just going back to my point about the end of the season being tough, Leicester has faced down already in February. They faced a 3-game stretch where they played Liverpool, City, and Arsenal. They did lose to Arsenal, but they won the other 2 games, including the surprise 3-1 victory at City. Then earlier this season, they had a run-in of Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, and Manchester City the first time around, and they won 2 of those games and drew the last one. And again, that's all they really need to do. They need to get, you know, a requisite amount of points. They don't have to be perfect from here on out because they've already done the legwork to get up this far ahead in the league.
Guys, is this more, you know, full credit to Leicester for being in this position, but I can't help but think that this is just a gigantic missed opportunity for these, you know, the so-called Big Five, Big Four clubs. You know, your beloved Arsenal, Man City, who everyone thought early on was going to be the team that just pulls away from everybody. Man United's been, you know, they've been caught in this, whatever you want to call it, with Louis van Gaal.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, you know, I know you need to be the old cliche, lucky and good, but is there really more luck to this than them being, you know, world beaters or
Let's say, I think there is, there's always a little bit of fortune when you're a champion. Let's say that Leicester in their final five matches gets 9 or 10 points or something like that. You know, that would put them up in the low 80s, which we have seen win the league before. And where the luck factor comes in is one of those other clubs, Arsenal, City, United, Chelsea, Liverpool, can't, you know, get their stuff together, so to speak, this year, whereas they might have, you know, put together a season where they have high 80s, low 90s point total. And so Leicester, you know, I guess you could say they capitalized in that regard. So there's always a little bit of luck mixed in, but, you know, at the end of the day, Leicester's not going to, they're not sorry for those other teams struggling. You know, they're doing what they have to do, and it's not their fault that no one's rising up to catch them.
I think this season, and you hate to take away from what Leicester has done because it is amazing, has been, as a whole, a giant aberration. I think we have to concede that. I mean, if you look at all the different strange things that happened, you know, with Man City starting off well and then just kind of completely going off the boil and never getting it back, Arsenal looking good but then having another injury crisis and then another one, Chelsea suddenly just inexplicably putting together the worst title defense in Premier League history and maybe even First Division history, I'm not sure, and having to ditch a manager who had put together a really fairly young and promising core that looked like it was primed to make a title run for the next half decade. You know, just team after team, you know, Manchester United is still a shambles. And that's probably putting it nicely. And for this all to happen at the same time, where even Spurs, let's be honest, who realistically should be another year or two away from being true competitors, there's a lot of talent on that squad, but that's a pretty young team. For it to go the way that it has, you know, I think you do have to credit a lot of it to luck. Now, at the same time, I think where you win a league title isn't in the big games, it's in the little ones. It's in, you know, getting those away wins at and, you know, Stoke is the cliche, but getting the away wins at Sunderland and at West Brom and at Everton and all those places that are hard to play, that's much more where the points are won than in the big derbies and in the big flashy matchups. And Leicester has just been so efficient at that. And they have gotten, you know, that 82nd minute goal where they've needed it. Or, you know, that 92nd minute equalizer to scrape out a point. So they definitely do deserve credit for that bit.
Yeah, and if I can, Alex, before you jump in, I just want to throw, you know, going back to what you just said, Leander, it's almost like Leicester has become Man United under Sir Alex Ferguson in that way. You just know that goal, if they need it late, is going to come. You just know that they're going to get that stop or make that save or do whatever it needs to be done. And so they you could see that kind of DNA in this team, even if, as you mentioned, it's not a good to bet on this being the case long term.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. You know, you got these big teams that spend a lot of money and that are expected to finish at the top of the table, and some of them are nowhere near that. Others, Arsenal, you know, got close, but they're not anywhere near the title race. And you've got this team that was on the verge of relegation that's just somehow found a way to just be consistent and to not mess up. And, you know, it's a wonderful story on the one hand, but then on the other hand, this might be the worst Premier League season in history in another regard.
Well, guys, we got to go. Another great talk. Let's be sure to subscribe to the FC Yahoo Soccer podcast on iTunes, and you can find all of our musings and insights on the latest news and the buzzy moments in the FC Yahoo blog on Yahoo Sports. For Alex Baker, Joey Galino, and Leander Charlakins, I'm Joe Lago. You have been listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer podcast. Bye for now.